Before we walk through the gates into Abney Park Cemetery to begin, what do you expect to see on this walk we're about to take today? Probably some trees and headstones, other visitors. What do you expect to learn? Given that this audio walk is described as a walk through the veteran trees and non-human networks at play in Abney, you most likely are expecting this to be a nature walk. And it is. But this walk we're about to take is about more than merely pointing out trees in the nature preserve. I want to show you the many networks at play here in Abney, the non-human actants working together and against each other in this vibrant ecosystem that is more than just a backdrop for headstones, but a thriving non-human community in its own right. Please enter the gates now, and when you see the main path up ahead, turn right. This walk is only a selection of the veteran trees here. If you want to see the rest of them, there are green plaques on wooden posts dotted throughout the cemetery, along the paths for you to come across and explore. There's also a map of the veteran trees available at the visitor center, which is by the Egyptian Gates entrance on the other side. And a PDF version of the map is available on my website, abneyrambles.com. I hope this walk inspires you to take a wander and discover these other specimens. I've also recorded this walk in summer, when everything is green and lush and full. If you're taking this walk at other times of year, some of the interactions I mentioned may be dormant or hidden from view. At the first path up ahead, turn left, then make immediate right. So what is a veteran tree? These are old trees that come in many forms. Not all of them are large and stately. Some have been pollarded, which means the top branches have been cut off, so that they don't grow too top-heavy in high winds that can make them fall over, and it also encourages new growth. They can be coppice stools, where shoots grow out of a veteran stump, which can render a veteran tree looking more like a cluster of small trees or even a bush. But often they are larger trees that have been around long enough to have damage that creates cavities and other niche habitats for fungi, insects, and animals enriching biodiversity. Veteran trees have extensive root systems that form the underpinning of the rest of the ecosystem of a woodland. The root systems within Abney are many hundreds of years old, and the networks of communication through these systems are unique to this park. Abney is a rare oasis of mature woodland in urban London. Up here on the right-hand side is a memorial tree planted in the memory of Eliza Banyan. This newly planted tree is a white lilac, which should grow to perhaps 10 feet in height and have beautiful white flowers with a heady fragrance every spring. There are 20 memorial trees that have been planted so far in Abney, but they're not all marked and some are quite hidden. Continuing along the path here, away from the memorial tree, up here on our left-hand side, we'll see our first veteran tree, number 4, which is a silver birch. As we come to the veteran trees along this walk, feel free to push pause and read the plaques and then start again whenever you're ready. If we come over here to the right-hand side of the tree, you can see a large gash through the trunk, which is caused by lightning. This tree is one of the first of quite a few hollowed-out trees we're going to come across today. Today, I see many spider webs and what looks like white lichen. What can you see? Okay, keep walking straight now, past the statue of Sir Isaac Watts. We're headed just on the other side of him. There's veteran tree number 6, which is a plantier's poplar. The tree is going to be on the left-hand side of the path, and the plaque is on the right. Notice how the smells of the plants and the trees change as you walk through the cemetery. Some areas smell different from others. They each have their own signature. And each area stays the same, no matter how many years I come here. The plants and the trees retain their own eco-scent. So as I move through the space, I find different scent memories pocketed away. The cavity in number 6 goes pretty deep. I can imagine things like living in there. Right now, I don't see anything alive, but just because I can't see it doesn't mean that it's not there. Looks like there's some side cuts Can you see on the side here, on the right-hand side? Caused by a saw of some kind, maybe. Okay, we'll be turning left here on the next path. But first across the way is Veteran Tree number 7, which is a hybrid black poplar. This tree is thought to be damaged by fire as well. Tawny owls breed annually in large cavities in the hybrid black poplars. There are quite a few here in the cemetery. Behind number 7, over here, on the left, is a very large cavernous stump. I'm climbing up here a bit. The fallow tree is hollow, and now it's a habitat. If you come up closer, you can just see inside through the darkness. Now we're going to keep walking down the main path here. On either side of this avenue, you can see there are many toppled obelisks and urns, bits of headstones cracked and lying about. That's the root system is making all the stones a bit tippy. The gravestones and roots are in this constant tango, which, when we get to the end of this avenue, can be noticed most by its lack of presence with the Bostock line, as there's been so much care to keep it in good repair and maintained away from too much evidence of time. It should be coming up here on the right pretty soon. Depending on what stage the trust is in their cycle of cleaning it when you take this walk, the lime will either be a dark patina with a green algae-looking type substance covering it, like the other surrounding monuments, or a freshly scrubbed, gleaming white marble, standing out starkly against the trees and stones, looking as if it was erected here yesterday. Right now, when I'm looking at the lion, there are flowers that are put between his paws, two orange roses. People also put coins there. Today? No coins. Just the roses. Perhaps you can see an offering when you're walking here. Take a look. Once when I was walking here and stopped by the Bostock lion, an old man came up to me, who I believe is one of the daily regulars here in Abney, and he said, "Do you know that you're supposed to put flowers and coins here in his paws and make a wish?" And I said no, that I didn't know this was a thing that was done. Apparently, the Bostock lion has become a place of ritual for people to put coins and flowers and make an offering to the peaceful lion. I don't know the meaning behind it, and when I asked him, he couldn't tell me how the ritual began, just that whenever he came by the lion, he put in a coin or brought a flower. I didn't have any flowers, but I took out a coin and put it between the lion's paws, and that seemed to make him happy. This is what he thought should be done here. But right now, there are only the roses, which is an interesting take on the classic interaction between the three main elements of a cemetery space: humans, stone, and plants. For most people who bring flowers to headstones in a cemetery, it's in remembrance of their loved one, directly related to the headstone to which they're taking them. But the offering of flowers to the Bostock lion isn't about specific grief, or perhaps even about grief at all. It's a symbolic gesture that is outside of one's specific reference to remembrance. The Bostock lion has been imbued with meaning beyond the Bostocks themselves, and now has become a site for various people in the community to impart their own meaning, their own ritual, and to personalize their interaction with the lion monument in what seems to be a spontaneous new custom that developed organically through word of mouth. Okay, make a right here on the main path just after the Bostock lion, and then we're going to walk on straight for a bit. We're going to be making a left here on this main path, but before we do, walk straight up, and on the right-hand side will be Veteran Tree number 24, a horse chestnut. The smell changes again when you get up to the horse chestnut. I don't know if you can smell that. It's the same wonderful plant that was over by the Isaac Watts statue. Have you noticed the scents change as you move through the different areas of foliage in here? Pay attention to that as you walk through the cemetery. What's so amazing about coming to an urban woodland like this is your sense of smell is so activated in a completely different way from the surrounding urban streets. It's a refreshing break. There's some beautiful deadwood at the foot of the horse chestnut. It looks to be crumbling back into the earth. This tree is very healthy and strong and big. I'm recording this in the early morning, right when Abney opens. And this morning, there are a few birds in the tree, singing away their morning songs. If you're taking this walk in the afternoon or the evening, you might hear different birds. Push pause in this recording and take a moment to hear what birds are with you now. Okay, now let's walk back now to the path where we were going to be turning left from, but which now, of course, will now be turning right. A little rat just ran across my path. There are quite a few rats here, actually. I'm sorry if you don't like rats. I happen to quite like them. There's a helpful fungus that grows on root systems, and they're called mycorrhizal networks. Experts of these mycorrhizal networks have discovered that trees talk to each other. They communicate their needs and send each other nutrients via a network of fungi growing within and between various root networks. These fungal networks help trees send warning signals about environmental change, search for kin, and transfer their nutrients to neighboring plants before they die. Around 90% of land plants are in mutually beneficial mycorrhizal relationships with fungi. Fungus colonizes the roots of the plant, which provide the fungi with food, and in exchange, the fungi help the plants suck up water and boost their host plant's immune systems. Mycorrhizae also connect plants that may be widely separated. When this relationship was first discovered in the 1970s, it was termed the Earth's natural internet. This underground internet connects the root systems of vast areas of plants. They communicate with each other regarding danger, for example, damaged root systems, attack by parasites, and distressing climate changes. Okay, right here on our right here, there should be a small path turning right. And then just here on our left will be veteran tree number 25, which is a spotted thorn. Ooh, and a squirrel. This tree here is an original Lodigy's planting from the beginning of the cemetery nursery in 1840, one of only 20 specimens that survived from the original arboretum. This old hawthorn is another hollow tree offering rich deadwood. The hollow one number 25 is on the other side of the tree. And I don't want to encourage you to get off the path, but I will go over there for you. Wow, it's almost split in two. The nature preserve caretakers will probably have to cut down the top heavy branches soon before it splits in two entirely. But it still appears to be alive and healthy despite all that. It looks to be too wide open to be a habitat for bats or owls, but it could be a rich place for fungi and insects. It's amazing a tree that looks like it's just bark is actually quite alive. Appearances can be deceiving. Okay, back to the main path here. We're going to continue walking on this path until it turns right at the end, and then just keep following it along until we reach number 29. Which is a 177-year-old veteran hawthorn tree that hosts a bracket fungus so rare that Kew Gardens holds a sample of this specimen for its reference collection. Our idea of the static and mindless life of plants is rather myopic. There's a large aspect of their unseen lives that speaks to teamwork and perhaps even planning ahead in the form of preparation in one part of the system for danger that's been alerted to in another part of the system. What I find most interesting about the hidden networks of communication between trees via root systems and VOC emissions from their leaves is that the idea of plant agency is not merely a theoretical concept. It's something qualifiable in the lab setting. It's a real-world scientific phenomenon that need not rely on a belief in magical spirits to be true. However, what is magic except science we have yet to understand? There is a magical element to what these plant networks do. Even if it can be documented and duplicated under lab conditions, it's still wondrous. When you walk in this section of Abney, these are little paths that are paved, and there are curbstones on either side that keep the soil and the creepers at bay. The area all through here is thick with undergrowth, and the paths wind around each other like maze. In the summer, when I'm walking now, you can feel the branches and the trees and ivy encroaching in on you. It's a much more intimate walking experience. We should be coming up to number 29 here on our left, the common hawthorn. It looks to be just dead wood. I've asked the trust whether this dead wood here in front of us is all that's left of the hawthorn, but they said the tree should still be here alive, not just dead wood. I can't see which one it is. Perhaps you can. Okay, keep walking down the path until it ends, then make a right here on the main path. Our next tree isn't a numbered veteran, but an interesting tree nonetheless. Just right across the path, down on the right here, you can see some bird boxes, or what I think are bird boxes, just up against the trunk. This tree looks like it's been pollarded or cut back. These boxes could be a human interaction to create more bird habitat, although it does seem a bit redundant considering the rich natural bird habitat in Abney. So I asked the trust what they mean, and they said any bird houses on site may or may not be in use, but either way, it would be ecologically damaging to remove them now. The trust put up bat boxes when they were carrying out the works to the chapel, specifically to mitigate against any potential loss of roosting space that the works may have caused. However, they didn't find any roosting bats in the chapel. The bat boxes are merely a safety measure for habitat preservation. I wish they had found bats, but perhaps they prefer the trees, which is just as well. These boxes on this tree could either be birdhouses or bat boxes. Either way, they are here to stay. On the right-hand side of this tree is a massive bracket fungus. It's a shame because coming up close to it, I can see some fingerprints on the bottom where people have touched it. The surface of the fungus looks like the wings of a butterfly or a moth. It's almost like velvet, and I can see the fingerprints clearly on it, and I wish they wouldn't have done that. It doesn't look like they've dug in. They've just touched it. But I don't think that's nice or right. But it's right off the main path, so what are you going to do? I've seen this fungus for many years, actually. Almost every time I come to Abney, I walk around and eventually I end up passing by this tree and this bracket fungus. They can live for decades, but I don't know the longest lifespan of a bracket fungus. Doing a bit of internet research, all I could find was how to get them off your trees, not cultivate them. So long-living bracket fungi don't appear to be of interest to the greater public. Right next to the tree with the fungus, just a few paces down, there was a broken gravestone obelisk. And not only is it broken, but you can see how they're hollow inside. This one is made of marble, and you can actually see inside the broken monument. And right here is a great image of the symbiosis between trees and gravestones, because the tree has grown around the obelisk, keeping it upright. And actually, I think the obelisk is keeping the tree upright. So this is a perfect example of the relationships at play in many Victorian garden cemeteries. After much of the money for garden upkeep ran out, and subsequent management upheavals and changing hands throughout the 20th century, Victorian garden cemeteries were left to their own devices with little to no human intervention, where plant life and headstones began their merry war for primacy. This conflux here of an obelisk and a tree is a beautiful allegory for the sometimes symbiotic relationship between stones and trees. Looking inside the obelisk now, I can see cans and a carry bag. Leave it to humans to treat it as a bin. But despite that, you can also see how these are constructed. It's an interesting insight into how these were made. Take a look at how they've joined them from the inside. Walking a bit further down on our left will be veteran tree number 28, another horse chestnut. It looks nothing like the massive stately horse chestnut we saw earlier. And it's hard to tell it is a veteran tree because now it's become a copse, which is a collection of small tree shoots growing up and out of the main veteran base. Take a moment here to look at this tree. If you were walking past it, not seeing the plaque here announcing that it's a veteran, or having a map to hand, you may not ever know that this is a veteran tree, that it's very old and its root networks are important to the ecosystem of the reserve. Much of what makes non-human networks so fascinating is their hidden aspect. Their complex relationships and tenacious life through history can't be learned by first glance. These networks require us to look more slowly. Okay, continue on this path here, just to the right of number 28. Make a right up here on this path coming up. Then make a left at the fork. On your right-hand side here is an excellent example of deadwood, which is also veteran tree number 21, a hybrid black poplar. The rich deadwood here of number 21 is one of the largest deadwood outcroppings in Abney. Huge, massive logs, and some of them with some deep caverns, similar to number 7 we saw earlier, but not quite as deep. Come close to them, see what you can see inside these logs. Behind the logs, up towards the right, are a few large bracket fungi. What's interesting about this fungus is it looks like there is the same green algae-looking substance growing on it, just like that on the Bostock lion, and little weeds and small plant shoots growing out of it too. There's so much life harmonizing on this one tree. And an empty bottle of Jack Daniels, because this is also a place of humans. Further along here, on the right-hand side, is veteran tree number 22, a western catalpa. Many trees in Abney have suffered through fire. However, number 22 has suffered more than most. For quite a few years now, number 22 has been my favorite veteran tree. When I've come for a walk in Abney, I often like to take a break here and sit on the grass by number 22 and look at the chapel. This tree has suffered not just one, but multiple fires, yet has thrived. I love the survival nature of this tree. In the summer now, it has leaves that are about 6 to 8 inches across. It's growing big and lush, up to about, I don't know, 20 feet high, I'm guessing. Absolute fecundity. I find it interesting because it's the tree that's been most abused, but the tree that seems to be thriving the most as well. There's something sort of I defy you about number 22. It's an inspirational tree. We continue walking now around the chapel to the right. We can see veteran tree number 23, another hybrid black poplar. This tree here has been struck by lightning. There have been many fires in Abney, both by lightning and human hand. These trees are hardy and have lived through a lot. Number 23 also has some bracky fungi in the base of it. It's a bit overgrown now, but it is there. Now, at the time that I'm taking this walk, which is in July 2017, the council has recently refurbished the chapel. And you can see, if you're walking close to the time when I am, there's some wire mesh in the windows. And if you walk towards the gates and look at the doorways inside, there's some mesh hanging there as well. But it's not actually to keep humans out. Well, the window wire mesh probably does double duty as that, but the inside mesh is for when they have the gates open, not to keep people from exploring the inside of the chapel, but to keep pigeons out. Because apparently, once pigeons roost, you can never get rid of them. So that's an interesting interaction between the human custodians of Abney and the preserve. Because even though we're surrounded by 32 acres of rich habitat for a variety of birds, pigeons want none of it. They want the chapel. Take a moment to come inside the chapel if you can, or just take a look from the gate. Sometimes the gates are open, sometimes they're locked. Today I'm lucky and they're open. Despite the fire that reduced this chapel to almost a ruin 40 years ago, it still stands. For 177 years, these walls have housed grief and love. Now the chapel is part of Abney Park in a new way. Finally, after 40 years, it will serve its community again and open its arches to new visitors to share history and local cultural events, and new memories will be made within its walls again. You can feel the history here. Okay, let's leave the chapel now. Replace the mesh as it was, keep the pigeons. Okay, so walk back to the main path here, and we're just gonna go right towards the memorial monument. Should be able to see it with its steps just up ahead. And we're going to be taking a path to the left. So turn left here. And just up here, on your left-hand side, will be another original Lottages planting, veteran tree number 16, which is a Perry's Weepy Holly. This is a 177-year-old holly tree. This impressive holly has also survived fire. Since this holly tree is older than the graves that are surrounding it, anyone who wanted a plot around this amazingly ancient holly bush would obviously have had to work around it. As old as the graves seem here, this vibrant green holly is far older. Its age not readily apparent by size of the bush or green of its vibrant leaves. I wonder what this holly is seeing. There's some wild blackberry bushes right here in front of the holly. I've always wondered if you can eat wild blackberries. But I was warned, never eat anything in the cemetery. Even if you're a professional forager, this is not the place to do so. Because of the Victorian practices of having lead coffins and also from embalming fluid in later years, the ground here has been saturated with arsenic. So, eat these blackberries and you may join them. Okay, let's keep walking straight to the main path up ahead and then make a right. Up ahead on your right-hand side would be another Lodigy's veteran tree, number 17, a Bhutan pine. This pine was once one of two, but one of them has since died. This pine didn't survive the fire that was set against it 25 years ago. Like with people, sometimes it's not the direct injury that kills the tree. The fire weakened the tree, which left it vulnerable to root disease, which is eventually what killed it. The strain of root disease that killed the pine is unusual in London, an indicator of the complex interconnected life cycles of decline and parasitism spawned by the old arboretum. However, this tree still plays its part in the ecosystem of Abney by providing a vital deadwood habitat. Continue down the path now to veteran tree number 18, a common ash. As you will no doubt have noticed by now, fire has unfortunately played a significant part in the demise of many specimens here in Abney. 5 out of the 12 trees that failed to survive the high winds of a very bad storm in 2007 showed signs of fire damage. These were mainly common ash and Italian black poplars, which were planted in 1890. Neither species compartmentalizes fungal pathogens well. The agents of decay were a common fungus, a brown heart rot that has had to diversify from its preferred host elm as a result of Dutch elm disease. Up here on our left is ash tree number 18, which was also damaged by fire many years ago. The bark was killed and a parasitic fungi colonized. Now this tree is hollow. However, it is still vigorous with new growth. The cavities in deadwood provide homes for bats, birds, mammals, and insects, and more fungi. This is an example of human intervention with a nature preserve, working for its benefit. Number 18 is a beautiful specimen. There's a little path here, worn away. It looks as if I'm not the only one to do this. Oh, wow. This is the largest cavity that I've seen yet. In case you aren't coming back here, which I probably shouldn't recommend you do, but if you do come back here, there is a little path that takes you up here, so I don't feel too bad taking you off the main path to see it. Come have a look at this hollow tree. Do you notice anything different about the hollow of this veteran than the others that we've seen today? Be careful if you get close, because it does go quite deep. Okay, walk back to the main path now, and then we're going to keep walking straight ahead. Local arboriculturist Russell Miller noted upon inspection that a high proportion of the remaining specimen trees have basal damage consistent with arson, suggesting that at some point someone made a determined effort to destroy all that was left of the original arboretum. The arsonist has caused the premature demise of many fine trees, and there are others still standing here that will fall before their time. However, habitats have been created for hundreds of insects and fungal species because the vandal accelerated some of Abney's trees into veterans, trees with cavities and other niche habitats, which adds to Abney's biodiversity. When woodland researchers use phrases like forest wisdom and mother trees to describe elaborate fungal networks and other symbiotic aspects of these elaborate ecosystems, they are using terms which can be compared to neural networks in the human brain. They are seeking to study and define interactions between plants in a way that the wider public can understand. As ecologist Susan Simard says, a forest is a cooperative system, and using the language of communication made more sense because we're looking not at just resource transfers, but things like defense signaling and kin recognition. We, as human beings, can relate to this better. If we can relate to it, then we're going to care about it more. And if we care about it more, then we're going to do a better job of stewarding our landscapes. As we're leaving up here on the left, you can just see the forest school beyond the fence. This is where school children learn about the wonders of the forest, build dens, go on nature walks, make natural arts and crafts, and play woodland games through the nature preserve that is Abney. I think it's wonderful that young children come here and learn about the nature preserve, that the cemetery isn't scary, that it's a place of life, that it has diversity in its many uses, whether that be for a community space, for concerts, art exhibitions or plays, to learning about trees, insects and animals, or how to garden and woodworking. The fact that schools come here teaches children from a young age to be more death positive, because it demystifies the cemetery. It's not the haunted ruin in the wood or where ghosts lie. It's a place for nature and for life. As you leave the cemetery, on the right-hand side is the visitor center, where you can find more information about a variety of interesting aspects of Abney and also Stoke Newington. I want to thank you very much for taking this walk with me today. This walk was made possible by the research conducted by local arboriculturist Russell Miller, the Abney Park Cemetery Trust, and various non-human interaction case studies researched for my PhD thesis. Thank you.